What's up, Internet? Welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardwar.
I'm Managing Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
This week, it's the iPhone 16e, which Sherlyn has reviewed. We're going to get her full thoughts on that thing. And also, Amazon held an AI event this week. We expected a lot of devices, but they spent 75 minutes talking about Alexa Plus, which is the AI-powered Alexa, you know, that they...
I don't know if we expected a lot of devices.
I expected one device. Yeah.
Maybe one. At least one. It's been a while.
Mr. Panos Panay was there, the father of the Surface, and no devices. Just him talking about AI, so that's weird.
Oh, and stay tuned. At the end of this episode, we included an interview that I did with the vice president of Alexa to talk more about the new Alexa Plus.
Anyway, folks, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes and drop us an email at podcast@engadget.com. You can also join us on our live stream on Thursday mornings, typically around 11 a.m. Eastern. You'll see our faces. Sometimes we'll do Q&A and show off devices as well. This week, Sherlyn has the iPhone 16e, which is the least impressive thing to show off lately. It's just like, hey, you have an iPhone from 10 years ago, a while ago. When last was there a single camera back iPhone?
Oh, God. Before the iPhone that was, 11, I think so.
Never mind. Ago. So, you know, it's like a flashback. All right. So let's talk about this thing, Sherlyn. And I checked out your review. First of all, you gave it a really, I think, serviceable score. Like you're saying 77 out of 100. Your title is What's Your Acceptable Compromise? And really, when we were talking about it last week, it really was like compromise seemed like the key word. The thing we kept coming back to was just one camera, no MagSafe, no fast wireless charging. Yeah. What are your overall thoughts on this thing?
I mean, so that headline is like all thanks to our EIC, Aaron Soporis, because I was like, where do I go from here? How do I? So he's right. It is like, instead of what's in your wallet, it's like, what are you willing to take out of your wallet? I don't know. Okay, I'll tell you the story. Okay, so yesterday I was at the Amazon Devices and Services event where there were no devices. And a bunch of other reporters had gathered and we were all like, you know, the like review's going up soon, right? And so we were all talking about our thoughts on the 16E. I was with Lisa DeChico, who's now at CNN, and Julian Tricazzo from Wired. And like, they were both going off about their own like grievances first. Julian was the first to be like, I can't stand that there's no MagSafe. And I was like, huh. I almost like was like, oh, I didn't really. And then Lisa goes, oh, I didn't mind that so much, but I can't stand that there's no dynamic island. And I was like, whoa, wait a minute. I pointed out that I didn't care about either of those, but I care that there's only one camera because there's so many. So all three of us had different things we couldn't.
I mean, you're all power reviewers, right?
We are.
Yeah.
I know. But I can understand that like a lot of the little, you know, the things that we find to be compromises are very unique to like each person's use case. And I think that that's the thing. And that's why I went with that headline in the end. It is ultimately like you are the one that accepts these compromises. You are the one as a person considering an iPhone that has to decide what's an okay compromise for yourself. And for me, the single camera is just, I can't live with it. So to me, the lack of ultra wide initially was just like, all right, well, I mean, I don't, you know, maybe I don't need an ultra wide. Maybe that's okay. Maybe my parents won't need an ultra wide. But I didn't realize until spending more time with the phone that it's not just that, right? Like the lack of a second camera or a second like source of data for Apple to pull information for photography, computational photography stuff, means that a lot of other things are just poorer than what you actually already have out there. So portrait mode was for me the biggest deal. There's also like you can't do the same photographic styles as you get on the regular iPhone 16s. Even when it does apply portrait mode, it's just less accurate. The sort of where they draw the line as to where to apply the blur is a bit messy because there's just one camera and it's doing face detection. So yeah, the other intriguing things about the iPhone 16e, or like to kind of give it a few, you know, here's your positives affirmations, I guess. It's like, yeah, it looks like, right, an iPhone 16. It doesn't seem to deviate too far from this year's lineup. And that's like, for the first time in a long time, has an entry-level iPhone, like an SE, you know, looks so similar. Or like the gap between the iPhone 16e to the iPhone 16 is not as far as the iPhone SE 2022 was from the iPhone 13. And that's a point that like Aaron pointed out as well. So that closeness to the iPhone 16 lineup is largely, I think, due to, I mean, what you can't see is the A18 chip inside, right? They have the same chip across the entire iPhone 16 lineup, which is kind of bonkers to me. And then there's also the fact that it looks externally quite similar, unless you open the screen. Then you see the notch, and then you see the thicker bezels, and then it's like, all right. And also, like, don't go look at the rear, right? The camera is just like a dead giveaway. But otherwise, if you're just kind of like staring at someone on the train holding onto the iPhone 16e, it's not easy to tell which model they have if you're not immediately looking at their camera. So yeah, I mean, those are some good things about it, right? The display is an OLED, and like, yes, I know that of all the choices they could have made, an OLED's not necessary, like for an entry-level iPhone, but it is very bright and vibrant. It doesn't get quite as bright as the iPhone 16 or even the iPhone 15, but it's nice. I don't like that it refreshes only at 60 hertz, but it's just much more vibrant.
So does the base iPhone right now still. So right?
Yeah, the exactly. iPhone 16 is the non-Pro phones don't have ProMotion, which is 120 hertz or up to 120 hertz refresh rate. So, you know, you would need to like shell out quite a lot more money for 120 hertz refresh rate on an iPhone. And I guess that's just what you got to live with. And also, to be fair, it probably impacts battery life in a way that you wouldn't enjoy anyway, because I feel like the Pro phones last a day.
Yeah. Although they have variable like refresh rates too. So it's like it slows down the refresh rate depending on like how fast you're doing shit. So
right.
I feel like an LCD that was a higher refresh rate would be an overall better looking experience than just, you know, putting OLED at 60 hertz. But yeah.
Yeah, I think that's like a personal thing. I like OLED, so like I like the look of it. I didn't really enjoy. Yeah, I'm not a fan of the LCDs, honestly. But here's the thing. When I said battery life, also, one of the great things about the iPhone 16e is its battery life, right? Like, I think it does last a lot longer than the iPhone 16, partly because it, I don't know, maybe because it doesn't get quite as bright, but like partly because it has a bigger battery. And I think all of us reviewers were kind of hesitant to be like, that modem, is it going to work or not? Because it's like very hard to say. I think most of us were supplied with the like with service for our review units, and it was like AT&T. And for me, it's really hard to be like, the C1 modem works better than my iPhone 16 Pro's like whatever modem's in there, because it was AT&T versus T-Mobile, right? It really wasn't down to the hardware. It was down to the fact that my carrier just doesn't have as good coverage as AT&T, sad to say. So I can't tell you, I wrote down like, yeah, I did the speed test and fast.com like testing on both phones, but it's
and we can't just throw over a SIM card anymore because there are no more physical SIM cards in iPhones. So we used to be able to
it's
do
just
that.
Not, I mean, it could support a dual SIM, like I could, you know, support like a, I could have set up a different SIM card in there to really do the, you know, apples to apples testing on an Apple phone. Haha, get it. But
can't move it as easily as you used to be able to.
Yeah. So. It's like give up my own phone for hours it's just not, it wasn't like super easy to do within the span of like a week that I had the phone. So anyway, it could be due to the C1 modem that battery life was better. But in general, like I just find that the non-Pro phones all kind of last longer than the Pro phones. The Pro phones have always on display, which is one thing that I think drains the battery too. And to be clear, the 16e, 16 or 15 don't have always on display either. So there's a lot of like little things that you have to consider. You're doing a lot of spec sheet peeping. I mean, I think we pointed out last time when we were talking about the iPhone 16e that like, you know, you don't have Wi-Fi 7, you don't have Thread, you don't have ultra wideband. And that's not just in millimeter wave 5G, but also in like locating things precisely, right? Like when you're using Find My. And also you don't have MagSafe. The wireless charging speed is slower, 7.5 watts as opposed to 15. So there's a lot of these little things. And depending on the audience, it may or may not matter. I don't know that my mom will care.
Yeah, it's for the people who don't know what they're missing, basically, right?
But then for those people, is $599 the price point, right? Like it's...
I don't think so. Like, given all the compromises you're listing, this is such a... Apple has put us in a weird spot, right? Because, like, $599, it is the cheapest iPhone. But used to be... I wrote a whole thing last year is why the base iPhone 16e was actually a pretty good deal, given everything they put in there, and it was cheaper than the Pros, and that thing is, what, $800?
The base iPhone 16?
The 16, yeah. And to me, that felt like, given everything they put in there, it seems good. This one at $600 does not seem like a big enough difference cost-wise to like turn people. Yeah, that's the main thing. And also, I think, so I set up an iPhone 14 Plus for my mom I was talking about last week, and she loves it, but also she really needs that bigger screen. You know,
yes.
Even though it's slightly harder to hold, like it is much easier once you're dealing with, you know, older eyes, basically. You kind of need bigger screens to use these devices correctly without like putting on reading glasses every single time. And that's why the Plus ended up being a good one. So I see people saying like, this is a good cheap one for your parents or something. A lot of people may actually find this even too small or harder to use. Yeah.
And so when you're considering that, right, like you want a big screen on an iPhone, the cheapest one you're going to get is the 15 Plus, I think. And that one is going to start at the same price. No, wait, same price as the iPhone 16, smaller one. So no matter what that decision is, whether you're going for iPhone 16 or 15 Plus versus 16e, the difference is $200. And if you're financing your phone over 2 months, that is like a few dollars a month over 24 months. Aaron and I were talking this out, and Aaron was like, I'm happy to eat two ramen meals instead of like going out every month just to save that money and make up for it. So it's like, it's quite easy to do the math here and go for something better instead of the 16e. Like for me, if you like taking photos at all, don't do the 16e to yourself. I mean, again, it's going to be a huge improvement in quality over the iPhone 11 and up, but even the iPhone 11 onwards has dual cameras.
Yeah.
Quality itself is same, but versatility is different, you know? So.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of feel that. Like, I don't want to sound like, hey, just put everything on credit or installment plans, right? Or deal with your carrier payments. But that is kind of the way costs break down, at least in the U.S. I'm sure in other countries where you're not paying, you know, monthly, or if you're paying like all up front, a lot of people just want to buy their phones outright. Then, yeah, this is legitimately cheaper and you'll feel that in your pocketbook. But I also agree that the smartest thing to do is not to give away all your money, right? But also not to pay extra interest on it. So the carrier payment plans are actually pretty good. And if you throw in an upgrade in there, that's how they juice you. Right. Like that's how they get to. They're like, oh, we're going to give you $800 in credit for this very, very old phone. But
all the trade-ins
credit. Yeah. The trade-ins, like that credit is useless outside of paying for a phone. But if you care about paying for your phone, then it's actually pretty useful. So that's how I ended up getting like the 15 Pro Max for like not much, because I just traded in an earlier iPhone. And
you have a good phone for like 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Play the system, folks. Like, play. These carriers want to give you money. They want to tempt you with things. The cheapest path for an iPhone may not necessarily be just the one Apple is selling. But again, also look at the used market. Look at other things. Yeah, I'm surprised you didn't bring up the iPhone 16 Plus, Trillin, because that one is $900. So not much of a bargain.
Yeah, it's a bit far out.
You're getting closer to the Pro there. Any other thoughts on the 16? Yeah, because I just feel like, hey, yes, it's a cheaper iPhone with a lot of compromises. And I just feel like, I don't think we'll be talking about this phone very much after this week.
Like, okay.
Yeah.
So my thoughts on the reviewing the iPhone 16e are that being forced to use a phone that feels like it's from like, I don't know, at least five years ago, right? Made me actually grow to appreciate the features I've taken for granted on the 16 Pro that I kind of poo-pooed at the start, right? So things like Dynamic Island, I'm surprised. I'm like, whoa, I actually liked Dynamic Island. And to Lisa's point, when she pointed out that she missed it, I'm like, yeah, actually, it is become, and it's not the aesthetic of it. It's not the all screen. It's the fact that it's functional. Your live activities sit there. It makes a big difference. And going back to the notch was like, huh? Where's my waveform for my voice memo? You know, it's kind of like,
where's your Uber timer? Where's your Grubhub? When is your delivery?
Right.
Like, all that
where's
stuff is really
Spotify
useful.
Spotify controls, all of that stuff. I mean, there is some kind of like some apps still sit at the top nicely, but not in the notch. And so it's just kind of weird. The other thing that I found myself missing from the iPhone 16 Pro is weirdly camera control, but not in the way you'd expect. So what I like about camera control, having it versus not, is that it's a really quick way to launch your camera in a dedicated, like it's just dedicated shortcut. You don't need to think about it. You just press it and it opens. And the 16e has the action button that you can customize to do that. And so I found myself doing that. But the thing is, you have to give it up. You know, like whatever. It's like, for example, I use the 16 Pro's action button to switch between silent mode and not silent mode. Mm-hmm. And
same.
On the 16e, you can't have both at once. So that's kind of sad. You can still use the lock screen shortcut, of course, but I don't want to have to pull out my phone, swipe the screen, and then take a photo. I'm just like, take it out of my pocket and it's good to go. you know. So those are the things like I learned from my review, not specifically about the 16E, but about these other features Apple has introduced that like I wasn't super impressed by at the start, but like now I'm like, oh, they have actually, I've grown used to them in my life. And that's why long-term reviews are important. And I would say stay tuned to our website to see like more of these long-term thoughts.
That's, yeah. I think that's ultimately it. It is. This is, I think, for listeners of this show, probably not a phone a lot of people would be buying. Ben, for the love of God, do not. Don't do it.
Get the iPhone 15. I think you might enjoy it, especially because if you don't care about Apple Intelligence and don't know what all the fuss is about, the 15 is a good phone.
15 still, or the 15 Pro, like honestly, any of those. Although it was only the Pro Max that works with Apple Intelligence because it has the additional RAM.
No, the Pro. The Pro alone will get you intelligence, so you're fine. Just the do the
plain
Pro.
15 Pro? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I wasn't aware of that because I was about to say that reading the reviews for the 16E convinced me to get a 16 base model or 16 Pro because I read Sherlyn's review and Julian's review at Wired back to back. And Julian made the really interesting point of, okay, yes, Apple Intelligence going to be in its infancy right now. Mm-hmm. But if you want continued access to all of the stuff that might be coming in the next like year and a half, 2 years, 2.5 years or so, because I do keep my phone for a while, then it's a good idea to have something that like can get that right now.
Ben, for you specifically, the voice notes transcription thing, that could be useful in addition to other recording you're doing. That's like instant transcription of a session you're in or something. So
yep.
That's good
yep.
stuff.
So like if I'm doing recordings with like lav mics, any of those lav mics that have gotten really popular in the last couple of years, you see TikTokers using them and everything like that. You should be able to use Apple Intelligence to transcribe this stuff that you recorded into, you know, the Shure app or the Rode app or whatever like that.
Not yet, but I think that'll definitely come. Anything else you want to add, Trillin? Because we got stuff.
I was going to say that the iPhone 15 mm-hmm. Pro, just to confirm, it does support yep. Apple Intelligence. So you can consider that. I mean, like, that's going to be cheaper than the 16. It's the same price as the 16, I'm sure. That's what I'm trying to do right now, is to confirm the iPhone 15 Pro pricing for you. I don't know that Apple still sells the 15 Pro, though. So if you can find it, get it. But if you can't, you know.
And after you're giving up the camera button if you go for 15 Pro, and also any potential other... I don't know if they're going to have like lock off points for like what Apple Intelligence features you get, because you'll have a slightly lower, intelligence chip than, in
future, right? Like if we're thinking that Apple Intelligence is going to stick around for 5 years, sure. Yeah. But I mean, yeah, I'm not saying don't buy.
I think it will in some capacity.
Sure. In some way, they might retire the name or something, but they'll still have the feature of like, intelligent Siri or whatever.
They're so dug in. Like all these companies are so dug in. They would look ridiculous
so
if
stubborn.
They're just like, forget about all that AI stuff that we tried to feed you.
It feels like NFTs from 3-5 years ago. I can't.
These are features you can touch and feel, and they do shit. But some of them don't. Some of them just don't work well. NFTs were just like useless. Anyway. Let's move on. We got other news. Let's talk about talking about potentially useless features. Amazon announced Alexa Plus. Sorry for people who have Echoes nearby, but the AI-powered version of its voice assistant that they've been talking about for a while. They announced, I think, 2 years ago, 2023, that they were working on a better conversational Alexa using generative AI tools. We hadn't heard anything about it until now. It's coming. They fully announced it. There's no clear arrival date yet, but it's going to be $20 a month on its own or a part of a Prime subscription if you already have it, and that is $15 a month. So clearly they just want you to get Prime. That's the whole point of Amazon these days. It's going to be coming to these devices with screens first, eventually to any of the devices. And since it's in the cloud, they're not doing onboard processing, you don't have to go buy new devices. So that's cool. I think that's the main good thing here. But what is Alexa Plus, Sherlyn, and are you intrigued by it?
Yeah, I wanted to say at the start of this episode, actually, really, just to give people a moment to go and mute their Echo speaker. So sure. While I waffle on for a little bit, I'm not going to say the A word. You have some time right now. Walk over to your speaker, mute the microphone. But anyway, it's impossible to avoid saying this word this episode at all. So your best bet is to have muted your speaker by this point, if not pause. Okay, so I mean, we knew it was going to be about this like redesign slash like next gen Alexa for this event. But some of us are still, I guess, hoping for a device because it's been a long time since there's been a new Echo speaker or a new Echo device. New Echo Buds, new like Echo Show, I guess. So anyway, attending this event was intriguing. It was fun for me because it was nice to like see people. I don't know if y'all read the live blog, but there was a moment where we were like moving from one spot to another. And I kind of saw Panos just kind of making his way through the crowd and nobody like knew. It was looking at it, I was like, oh, this man is like being treated like an average Joe. And I'm like, this is Panos, excuse me. So I just as I was coming up the stairs, I saw him, I went, hey, Panos. And he like turns around and he's like, oh, hi. And then he's like very friendly. He's like, I was with Lisa as well. And so like he was shaking hands with both of us and he was like saying nice things. He's like, oh, thank you for your very kind article to me. And then like he's talking to Lisa as well. So we're all just like, all right. I mean, that's the sort of thing I go for. I like
all the
enjoy
while staring
the
you
of.
Deeply in the eyes, because the thing about Panos,
although making
is
me question my life choices, yeah,
he has those you know, like when you talk to a mystic or like a magician and they just like stare into your soul a little bit. The Panos has
it's that so funny. It was very like the in the, so his portion of the presentation too was funny because okay, so the nobody was able to see this setup because this was not a live streamed event. You could only see our photos and our live blog, and maybe you saw, you know, social media influencers live streamed it. Perhaps. So, but to describe it for you, we were all set around the stage and there was this gigantic projection of an Echo Show, which is their like picture frame looking smart display. And there's a webcam or an actual camera, I'm sure, built into where the camera of the Echo Show would normally be on this gigantic 100-inch Echo Show under the wall. And then, you know, whatever Panos or other people doing demos were doing on a more like regular size Echo Show, probably 21 on the stage, was reflected in real time on that. So at some point during the demo or the presentation, they had Alexa use the webcam on the wall and see if the people, you know, watching Panos do his thing were reacting in a certain way, right? He was like, oh, Alexa, like, tell me what this 200 group of 250 people look like. And like, you know, I'm nervous, you know, tell me about what they're saying, like the expressions are telling you or something like that. And it was like, oh yeah, they all look happy and like they're ready to listen to what you're saying because they have their laptops open and that sort of shit. And I will say like, having seen the picture or the view of like myself in the audience, I'm like, you know, I think Alexa did like, I mean, if it was accurate and truly like a live present demo, then it's like it worked to the way like the humane AI worked, right? Like they're good at parsing image info. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I don't know why.
If somebody
really
had like stuck up their middle fingers or like did something really wild, like they said it was a live demo. So Alexa could have just said that too. Like could have pointed
it could
out,
have. I didn't. So I,
jerk. Yeah,
I know when I saw the camera open, I was like, yeah, I just put my hands up immediately. I was like, yeah, but I wish I should have done something different, but I wanted to verify that it was live. And so like, I was just trying to move around and see if I was in it.
Good. That's a good move. Actually.
Yeah, no, that was a good move because otherwise it could easily be a canned.
Right.
Response.
So I saw myself and I like was in the outfit that I was wearing that day. Like, it's just accurately me, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I mean, I guess that excitement in my expression did get correctly captured by Alexa.
No,
but
it
look,
was just you. It locked onto you. Like this one girl is a little too
one
too
person
excited. Please calm down. Please
yeah,
calm down.
Like chill. Your laptop's falling off your lap. Like maybe calm down. But you know, so to my like what I was saying earlier is that it's been a while since they promised or previewed this, and now it's like I don't know that I was super excited by anything I saw. Demo. Hang on, there is one thing I am. And like everything else seems very reminiscent of like Gemini and like it's the new Siri and like the I mean, I guess OpenAI ChatGPT also.
Can
has
we get
these.
Back to what is it?
Yeah.
It is Alexa, but it is also smarter, more conversational.
Right, so
you don't have to keep saying Alexa all the time. You can continue
Right.
The whatever you're saying to it.
Right. Basically. More conversational, yeah, more natural. Yeah. And if that's reminiscent of anything other than what I've already said, it's also very co-pilot, by the way. Like, it's just, it's contextually aware of like the conversation. So you don't have to follow up and say like, my favorite team is this. And then like, you know, how did my favorite team do? You can, it will remember that stuff within the same conversation. You can also send it documents and emails and stuff and have it pull out pertinent information for you. So I think the demo that was given was like somebody sent their HOA bylaws or whatever and asked if they could use solar panels. And then Alexa was smart. Like,
yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Alexa was like, oh, you can, but make sure it's just like, it seems like your HOA supports green energy, but doesn't want it to be visible. So as long as you use it on the side of your roof, that's not facing out, like you will be fine.
That's actually useful, by the way. Like, I just want to point out that whole process, even if it means like you have to do something like drop a PDF to Alexa through the website or the app or something, like there are all these documents we live with. Nobody mm-hmm. reads them all, right? Mm-hmm. So, and then you get people on Nextdoor or like your neighborhood Facebook group who don't read, asking the basic questions of stuff that's already explained. So like, if you could just talk to your Alexa and like get accurate info, that's cool. That is interesting. But also, I feel like there's a downside to that, because then you're putting all your trust in this machine.
Exactly.
To have interpolated that correctly, right? So they showed off one example of like, oh, you got your kids' schedule for their sports games. When am I supposed to bring snacks for that? If that thing gives you the wrong date or tells you any bit of wrong info, that's a problem for you.
Yeah.
That's a problem for your kid. That's like social embarrassment, because then you're the parent who screws up bringing snacks and you don't want to be that parent because other parents are so judgy. So that's the part where I'm like, I don't know how much we can trust this. You know, this is a nice little helper, but you're still going to have to double check that info, I'd say.
Are you okay, Devendra? It feels like you think your parents are judgy.
Wait, Sherlyn. Wait till you encounter more parents.
I think there's quite a few I've already seen online. But okay, so,
yeah,
I mean, there's that stuff. And then what really intrigued me about the new Alexa, and I'm writing a story on this for the website, by the way, or I've already written, it's just not going up yet. It's the third-party integration side of things. So Amazon's whole point, right? Let's start from there. Amazon's whole point was that these LLM, like, based assistants, one of their greatest, like, flaws or, like, weaknesses, is that they can't really work well with APIs. So Alexa Plus is going to work with third-party services in three different ways. And it's important because, like, you think about how, like, all these machine learning or like these generative AI chatbots, they generate things for you, but they rarely ever can do things with other companies and businesses on your behalf. And so this is going to be crucial to making like the Alexa Plus experience much more useful, because like so far we've been limited to talking to these chatbots and being like, create my essay for me, summarize this thing for me. Like, it's very limited to generative stuff. But once you can broaden beyond that, it gets really useful. And I think that's why I'm so intrigued. And so the three ways that Amazon's going to use make this work is one, through APIs. So it's already worked with, like, it says tens of thousands of its partners at launch, including things Uber, Samsung, Xbox were some of the logos that we saw. So those are some sort of API integration, which means I think they've worked together with the company to ensure that that works. And that's an impressive number at launch. The second way is this thing that sounds very familiar. Basically, Alexa will be able to navigate websites on your behalf. It can like go out to like, let's say, a Mala Projects website and scour it for you and find a calendar.
It's a restaurant that children can't stop ordering from. Yes.
I love Mala Project in New York. But yeah, so it you can just be like, Alexa, like, what's that restaurant we really like in the East Village? And it'll be like, oh, these are the things. And then like, you can be like, oh, can you make a reservation at that second one? And it'll go to the website for you and scour it. And then you can just tell it things like, oh, for three people, for how many? And then it'll make the reservation. If that sounds familiar, it's because Google's Duplex was supposed to do that for you with restaurants. It would phone businesses on your behalf and use
literally
this sort
phone
of humanistic,
the businesses and talk to you.
Yeah, it would use a human voice to talk to them. And that was kind of strangely implemented, the Google Duplex system, because it was a human talking to a machine to interact with humans on their behalf.
It offloaded so much work to the human workers, and that's what pissed me off about that whole
thing. Right. It would bother actual human beings, which is where kind of it was very annoying. And this format that Amazon is describing has a machine talking to website, and it kind of eliminates that like sort of human frustration. It can probably be more likely to make mistakes, in my opinion.
Well, Like, how is it talking to the website is the key. Is it talking to OpenTable? Is it talking to, like, a service that already exists?
Exactly. Okay. So it can't. So there's two ways, right? One, so the OpenTable thing is through the API method that I mentioned before, which is when you have enough of these APIs, Alexa can form like what it calls experts. So it can have a reservation expert, it can have a food ordering expert. Blah, blah. That's part of the API experience. The second part is it just goes out and scours the internet. I don't know the full technical details yet, and I'm going to ask Amazon for more. But what it is basically, yeah, the software is going out and scraping websites and being like, here's the reservation system and here's all the available things. I'm going to click through as if I am a human being clicking through these things and initiate the reservation. So I think that's super intriguing. That also sounds familiar. And Devendra, you'll like this and you can tell me if you have faith in this. It sounds a lot like the Rabbit R1's like large action model.
I mean, sure.
Which it's was like just getting the LLM to do actions.
That just, yeah, that does stuff. It kind of sounds like that. Again, we have to see if it actually works. I have faith in APIs because robots understand APIs, right? You trigger a reservation function to this restaurant, has all the data already there. Having a robot just be like, can you scrape the text in this? Does this have a form to input for reservations? Can you input into, like, that will not work. That definitely won't work.
Right. So, Yeah. And we saw that the Rabbit R1 struggled with it. So I don't know. I want it to work. I don't know the details of how it'll work. So, like, to be extra clear, right? Like, we're kind of speculating a little bit here on how it all works. But it seems in essence and spirit to be very similar to Duplex and the Rabbit R1's LAMs. So we'll have to see how effective it really is.
My question to you, yeah, would you trust it? Because no, I can't. And so, just like open OpenTable on your phone or something, or just go to Google on your phone because sometimes you can reserve right from the Google Maps thing. Just doing it in 5 minutes on your phone, I trust that. And even then, I'm like a little wary that the restaurant doesn't always check those digital reservations.
Exactly. They don't get a concept. And you show up and there's no table waiting for you.
And there's nothing for you. I don't trust it just talking to this stupid speaker that I've had for a decade, you know, that had trouble, you know, understanding me, will be able to effectively reserve something. I would love it for it to be able to do something like, hey, set up this reservation on OpenTable and let me double check it. Or set up a order or Uber. To me, that's more useful because I like stuff I can trust. And the whole thing about the Rabbit device, you couldn't trust anything.
You couldn't trust it.
Shit. Yeah.
I wanted to say that like the demo that they did was of Thumbtack, right? So Thumbtack is this like professional people that you can hire, kind of like Handy, but I guess it has a website and doesn't have an app. So what I think that the second method that Amazon's describing brings is that it eliminates or it at least like opens up the playing field to smaller businesses that don't have apps, that don't have developers who can work with Amazon to integrate APIs or to come up with their own APIs. It just makes it like it levels the playing field a little bit, right? And then finally, the third way that like Amazon is making Alexa Plus work better with their party services is, and this is where it's a bit dystopian, is through all these AI agents. So Alexa can go talk to AI agents on your behalf. So instead of having to, like the demo again during the presentation was to Suno. So like, Alexa, go ask this thing to make me a country music song about bodega cats. And it was like, cool. I think you heard the song, Devendra. It was a kind of a cute song.
I could barely hear it.
But you also could have gone to the website to ask for this song, right? So one day, eventually, you'll probably be able to get Alexa to talk to, like, say, the United Airlines customer service chatbot or somewhere, your bank's chatbot. And the idea of these bots talking to each other is just so funny to me.
It's sort of like, they have sort of separated the idea of visiting websites. And it's just like you're asking something to go visit something for you and talk to that something. So you can think of AI agents as just like websites that talk to each other, I guess, is this kind of the way this is all going. Briefly, like we should talk about, like, they talked about all sorts of other features for this too. Like you'll be able to order groceries just by talking to it or other delivery services. They showed off a feature of like your kids can use Alexa Plus to basically conjure stories together and have like shared story time together, which is the whole thing. So
yeah,
a lot of cool ideas. To me, this is like the most useful form of like generative AI stuff I've seen in terms of like, I don't want to type more stuff into search fields for Copilot or ChatGPT. Like I want to be able to just talk to things.
Yeah.
Yeah. And have it come back with information. My other thing, though, is like I am getting the sinking feeling that I may have to just divest myself of a lot of Amazon stuff at this point, because right. the very morning yeah. that this was announced, we also got Jeff Bezos's memo to the Washington Post editorial, you know, op-ed page, where there was just, he was just like, this is going to be my little kingdom. And we will write about what is fair and whatever. And like, we are in the midst of like a billionaire takeover of the American government, but also of so many other things. And I'm like, it is wild that he chose that morning to do it. Jeff Bezos has been on a weird trajectory for a long time, but now it's like, can I justify Alexa Plus? Like, even if I'm still currently a Prime member, should I be using this or should I move to Google devices? Google has done a lot of crummy things too. Should we just like be really careful about any of these AI tools at this point? Like, there are moral questions now that we have to kind of sit and ask ourselves. Yeah.
Yeah. Bit depressing.
We can't just like you. It's sort of like you have to ask more questions now. Like, I think pre-iPhone era, we were like, oh, cool tech, cool, fun toy.
Yeah.
I can get excited for this.
It used to be fun.
And post-iPhone, it's like, well, no, this device requires lots of low-wage labor in China, and people were killing themselves at factories. There are all these moral costs to technology that we just didn't think about that much, and now it is front and center. And yeah, I don't know. To me, it's something I can't stop thinking about at this point. So Alexa Plus seems cool for many reasons. I don't know if I'll be able to trust it, even though I won't be paying anything extra for it, and maybe I should just give up on Amazon Prime altogether. I don't know if you have any other feelings on that, Sherlyn or Ben.
I mean, I agree. I think I was going to like stop buying stuff from Amazon, and I've drastically decreased the amount of shopping I do on Amazon and Target. I just go and buy local things, which like I was already trying to do anyway, but I just quite like the balance is swung in a different direction by a lot. And but I do know that like Amazon, like the commerce and the way it services a lot of like businesses like ours, it's difficult for me to like, every time I need to like do an Amazon like run, I'll be like, all right, I'll at least like try to shop it through an Engadget link or something to make myself back the 5 cents. I don't know.
I think that's fraudulent. We're not going to admit to any of that on this podcast.
I don't know if it's fraudulent. Like, am I not allowed to buy something through my own
I think
website?
It's only fraud if you're doing it like automated like 5,000
like
times a day.
Yeah, I'm not like gaming or goosing. I'm like every now and then
I've absolutely goosed my own affiliate links in the past. I will admit to that. So
right. But, I mean, if we need to cut this out, we'll cut this out. But like for me, it's like I'm not here telling y'all to do it. I'm also transparently telling you that we do make money
marketing
off of it.
Became a thing, so it doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah, so anyway, that's the only way I can see continuing to use Amazon on an ad hoc basis, and also when you can't get something anywhere else, which is rare these days, but I can understand that for like certain parts of the country or the world that there's no other option maybe, or there's no easy financially like comparative solution, right? Amazon is cheap, and if you're in a bind, then like maybe that's like all you've got. So I don't know. I mean, I don't want to judge anyone for not doing it. I'm just saying I'm trying to do it because we have the power. We just have forgotten we have the power. We just, instead of exercising our collective power, we've chosen to just rant and be loud. And I think that action is where it'll... I really would be curious to see... I'm going on a tangent now. I'd be curious to see how Target's doing now. But yeah.
I know, people are active about it. Thoughts, Ben? And then we'll run through real quick. Yeah.
So to get back on topic, I'm wondering how much of, Dev, your tendency towards saying like, hey, can you build an order and then let me check it, is based in just kind of like old internet understanding, like big purchase requires big screen.
We're millennials. This is the thing. Like this is the old person's thing. Like kids will be just like talk to their AI agents and get stuff delivered and not see all the fees and not
but
see
I
all the stuff.
But I wonder if they will be happy with what they end up getting, because all it takes is like 2 or 3 garbled orders and people say, oh, well, maybe I don't want to use this, or maybe I want to use this in a different way. So is the workflow for how you like build an order and then check it, is that going to be something that people end up doing themselves initially and then it gets built in by the developers? or the other way around.
I don't think you have the ability to do that. You don't have the ability to do it right now. Like, you can have, from what we've seen from the demos, it can produce an order for you. But I don't think you can just, like, fill your cart and then you will empty the cart in your, you know, Grubhub app or whatever, or finish an order. I don't think that capability is there. But I think people are going to ask for it because, yeah, they're going to run into things where you don't understand the fees. There's a lot of fees on delivery apps and other things. There's a lot of ways these apps can, like, really screw you over in terms of...
On top of the lack of ability for comparison shopping.
Yeah. That's, I mean, and then you're like, okay, you'll let the AI do the comparison shopping. I'm like, okay, who has the lowest fees? Who has, what's, where can I get a pizza for a good price that'll get delivered to me right now? That's the sort of thing AI should be able to solve that's well rated and everything. I don't know what I can trust. That basically,
it seems like we're setting ourselves up for a situation where we're like, okay, yeah, we'll let the AI do the thinking. And then there's going to be some big like kerfuffle about how the AI was actually like, no, actually, I prefer Amazon services. And we come back to the idea that Lina Khan was right all along.
Maybe. I mean, listen, literally right now, Jeff Bezos is out there turning the Washington Post, you know, editorial page into his personal playground of just like, I don't know.
Freedom and free enterprise, people. I think.
Yeah, because that's the thing that has trouble in America. Let's move on to other news real quick. I'm just going to run down this stuff because I think it's worth reading. Check out our stories on all of these things. Framework had a bunch of devices that they announced. The modular laptop company, they announced a modular desktop, which is a wild concept because desktops are modular.
Exactly.
They're modular and upgradable. And Dan Cooper, who wrote up all these stories, was like, yes, aren't desktops already modular? But they have basically created this cool, like, little mini ITX case that is easy to put together, is using some standard parts, and it's also using that Ryzen AI Max chip we talked about at CES, which has a pretty good GPU. So this isn't a desktop where you're going to be putting in a graphics card or something, but it's kind of a cool project for, like, a teenager or a kid who doesn't want to build a full-size machine, but maybe put together a decently capable little box that can play some games. And they're also bringing Ryzen chips to the Framework 13 laptop. And also, something I'm kind of excited by, they are teasing a cheap 2-in-1 convertible 12-inch laptop, the Framework Laptop 12, that I think could be really, really cool. So, again, similar, it's going to have, like, modular components you can plug in, but it's not underpowered. I don't think we have pricing on that yet, but hopefully it's going to be, like, decently priced. This could be a cool little thing for a lot of people. So, yeah. Sherman, any thoughts on that, on Framework?
I just am trying to care.
Well,
I think,
listen,
it's nice to support a smaller business than, like, yeah, the HPs and the Lenovos and the, you know.
Yeah, we complain about when those companies screw up all the time. Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's good that there are alternatives.
I think it's unique and cool in a way that Nothing as a brand, as a phone maker, is unique and cool. This is maybe the Nothings of laptops. Sure. Framework's been around for a very long time. And there's a lot of, like, littler laptop brands out there. Like, man, they're escaping my memory. So, like, Framework's doing its own thing, and I respect that.
It's a unique thing. Like, the thing about Nothing is that nothing is doing is actually new or different. They're just like, here's a different design for an Android phone. It doesn't actually function.
Right, but if you don't want to support Apple or Google or Samsung for some reason.
Isn't Nothing then, like, backed by, like, a major Chinese corporation?
That might be OnePlus.
Yeah, yeah.
So, well, I think Nothing is on its own still, so we'll see.
Yeah. We don't fully know. Carissa wrote up the story. Carissa Bell wrote up about iPhones having a bug where they briefly changed the word racist to Trump in iOS dictation. To me, that doesn't seem like a bug. So we're just going to move on from that. Clone Robotics, Protoclone, one of the first lifelike robots, a robot body that somebody has developed. It looks like a freaking nightmare. Go check out our story on the Protoclone bipedal musculoskeletal Android V1. It looks like a zombie robot, and it's dancing on wires. It looks horrific.
You know what it looks like? The what character from Prometheus?
Yeah,
with the kind of, like, sandy white skin.
Yeah, I don't know what they call them. It was like the originators, the people who, spoilers for Prometheus, the people who seeded humanity, essentially. So that's cool. That's a whole thing. Ben, you brought up the story. Human therapists prepare for battle against AI pretenders. And this is like, therapists essentially think, like, AI bots are going to be a big problem when people start to ask them for mental health help. And there have been stories of where people have harmed themselves, teenagers have hurt themselves because of what they were seeing from an AI bot, basically. So that's dangerous.
Yeah, the thing that really concerns me is how accessible these are on Meta products right now. Because if you do enough scrolling on Instagram, you'll see like their little like chatbot insert between a couple of the posts of, you know, from accounts that you follow. Hopefully a viewer would be able to see like, hey, this is right next to like an AI clone of the Hawk Tua girl or something. So maybe I shouldn't consider this like actually high quality psychological help. But you never know.
In so many ways, we are not prepared for AI. You know what I keep seeing in TikTok is like a lot of, I'd call them tired millennials who are just like, you know, guys, we are sandwiched between the boomers who didn't understand technology and then the youngs, the Gen Z, who grew up with tech, but also grew up with really easy to use tech. So they never had to fully understand it.
And yeah, we're sandwiched like, between the boomers and the iPad babies.
And the iPad babies. And now we're like, oh, so now we gotta explain. I gotta tell my parents how to use their phones, but also make sure my kids don't like talk to kidnappers on Minecraft or Roblox or whatever. So we are screwed digitally. So which is also why I have so much trepidation around AI in general. Like this stuff is going to happen. These therapists are right to be worried because we are weak-minded primates when it comes to putting souls or putting like meaning into things. So if a chatbot is talking to you like a human, you're going to treat it like a human. You're going to treat that advice like it's coming from a friend or something. And that worries me. Sherlyn, I know you care about mental health stuff. I don't know if you've thought about how this could hit.
I mean, I've thought that social media has already done this. Social media has already destroyed kind of where people get their mental health info from. I mean, we started first with the internet, and then as the barrier to entry gets lower and lower, now we're at the barrier to entry of being a human at least is also falling down. So it seems like it's just, yeah. I mean, I talked to my therapist about it too, and my therapist and I we're both, you know, concerned. We're just like, eh, but it's not easy for people to, you know, get help. And therapy is expensive.
So they're going to reach out to whatever resources they can get.
They're
going to
find whatever they can. I mean, I could go on a rant for hours about how much I hate like the advice that people on Reddit parrot at each other because they saw one person make this one comment one time that they liked and then they just copy and paste it everywhere else. I really hate that. One person made a joke like years ago that I too choose this man's wife. And now you see it everywhere by like all kinds of other people because they can't come up with their own jokes or something. I mean, I'm being mean. I think it's a funny joke, but
it's true. It's true though. Yeah.
It's the same.
Delete Facebook, spirit. Hit the gym, lawyer up. Like, yeah, it is unhelpful. And from the point of view of the developers, especially if they have no contact with actually going to therapy, they might be like, oh, you know what? Therapists are like just giving out the same advice to all of their clients. So why don't we automate that? Because I don't know, the therapists might be bored or something. But oh my God, that is such a misunderstanding.
Yeah. Too much. Too much information flowing around, unfortunately, and like we are so bad at processing it, which is also why I'm worried about AI in general, because it's also simplifying that information even more for a really gullible populace. Anyway, let's move on to what we're working on. I'm reviewing a lot of shit. A lot of GPUs are coming in. There is one fun CPU that I'm looking forward to testing in a couple of weeks, so more on that soon. I don't know if you want to shout anything out, Sherlyn.
I mean, it's nonstop from here on out, guys. Strap in. It's strap review in. Season. It's event season for some reason already. So, yeah.
It is.
Stay tuned. Come over to Engadget.com.
End of February. It's the end of February. We're still recovering from CES.
Yeah, what for what happened? It's worth. Yeah. This weekend is Mobile World Congress. Like, this weekend, God. Mobile World Congress starts. Yeah. So, just pay attention. You know, there's going to be quite a lot of stuff coming up. Things.
I miss going to Mobile World Congress. I miss doing that whole thing. It's actually been... I think for the first time I did that was like I did it on my own at my last site in 2012. And that was like a wild experience of when like there was so much 5G hype.
Fun.
There was so much 5G hype in the earlier, simpler days. Mm-hmm. I saw that Nokia, the 41 megapixel camera for the first time. And that was like a big deal back then. Anyway, shout out to Mobile World Congress. Check out our coverage on all that stuff. Let's move on to our pop culture picks for the week. I just want to say I've been playing a lot of Avowed. Avowed is just where my jam is because the world is insane right now. This is Obsidian's kind of their Skyrim, their like simpler, more focused version of Elder Scrolls. It's on Xbox Game Pass right now. So if you have Game Pass, it's really easy to try. I just love the look of this world. I love exploring it. It has a really good aesthetic. If you remember that scene in the movie Annihilation, which is one of my favorites, but the scene where people start to turn into plants, essentially.
I love like that scene so much.
The bodies of plants. Avowed is a game where you play somebody who has been touched by a god at birth, and you have these like godlike powers. And as you design your character, you can have like plant face. Basically, you can have roots growing out of your heads or seashells or things like that. I think people who are tryptophobic may have a lot of trouble with this game because it's leaning into like really weird looking designs for people. But also, it's a really cool fantasy world. I just love like whenever I'm playing, I try to like put in an hour at a time. I discover things all the time. Like there's always something interesting happening. It's a really fun world to just sit and explore. Also a really useful thing to just like, you know, I'm testing so many video cards. It's a really good way to compare them to each other. So Avowed, I'm really digging it. Sholin, anything you want to shout out?
Yeah, I've been on a documentary kick. But I would first start by telling you what you should not watch. It's not a documentary, but based on like real events. The Netflix show called Apple Cider Vinegar.
Really? I was saying I was going to recommend that to you.
I was going to say that I don't know if I already brought it up on this show, but I'm now realizing that I didn't. I tried starting to watch it maybe a couple weeks ago, and I just could not. It's a bit too triggering for me. It's as someone who's gone through a lot of like people in my life with cancer diagnoses, dying from cancer, that sort of stuff. It is a lot. I think in one of the episodes last year, I recommended Scamanda as the podcast. That was a woman who was posing as someone suffering from breast cancer. Apple Cider Vinegar tells the tale of Belle Gibson in the dramatized like retelling of the story of Belle Gibson, who claimed to be dying from brain cancer and all kinds of terminal cancers, but actually lied about it, but profited majorly off of it.
And was a big healthcare like a guru. She did a lot to spread a lot of like health, like new forms of health, right? What do you call it? Natural health.
Yes.
Basically.
Yeah. Yes. Like, oh, you can eat your way out of cancer, basically. Like, eat well, eat healthy. And was more or less pitching it as a way to like, you know, heal herself. But anyway, and instead of watching Apple Cider Vinegar, I couldn't. But I was still very drawn into the story. And so thankfully, Netflix actually has a different series called The Search for Instagram's Worst Con Artist. And it is about Belle Gibson as well. But it is more of a documentary retelling. The reason I really couldn't stick through Apple Cider Vinegar is because they also bring up this other influencer that Belle Gibson drew inspiration from. And that was a very young person. Yeah, Mila. She was diagnosed with an aggressive form of, I guess, sarcoma cancer. And so had to be, you know, she was very young and was contending with these things that had to do with amputation. And that was when I had to stop because it was getting a bit too close to
home.
It's
a bit much. I will say, like, I think the show is really, really well done. But it is like a lot all at once. It is well acted. Caitlin Dever, who plays Belle Gibson, she has been one of my favorite, like, young actors for a while. I think she was in Justified at one point and she was just incredible in that show. So yeah, it is a really well-made show and very much like it feels like it's made by an Instagram, you know, somebody who was raised on Instagram basically, because like it's edited in that way. It like goes through a lot of like different ways of showing the story. It's juggling three storylines at once. It is good, but I can understand why it's too much for you, Sherlyn.
Yeah. So to that point, I liked it. I just couldn't keep watching. I do agree with you that the style of it is really nice and very easy to follow. But even if you did enjoy Apple Cider Vinegar and you want to continue watching and following on that theme, then yes, so go over and watch The Search for Instagram's Worst Con Artist. It's a two-part docuseries. They interview Belle Gibson's brother, Belle Gibson's stepfather, and the bunch of journalists who like pursued that story and how they came to find out what was happening. So yeah, very interesting to me. And so I will leave you with that as my recommendation this week. Well, that's it for the episode this week. Everyone, thank you as always for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our former managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Blue Sky at Devendra, and I podcast about movies and TV at The Filmcast, filmcast.com.
If you want to send me like social media accounts that are actually doing good in this world, you can hit me up, I guess, on Threads at Sherlinstagram, or preferred is on Blue Sky at Sherlin at bsky.social. You can also email us your thoughts at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review wherever you're listening to your podcast and subscribe in your favorite podcast platforms.
I've got a good social media account for you, Sherlin, actually, and that is go watch Keith Lee's videos, because Keith Lee has been touring the UK and having a bad time with British food.
Oh, no.
And it is hilarious to see. And the Brits are fighting online.
I love that.
And it is it's really
interesting. I will give you one like social media account that I follow that is kind of an example of what I'm looking for. We Rate Dogs is literally my favorite.
Very nice.
Yeah. Thanks to everyone that like struggled with us through the technical issues for the live stream again today. We really appreciate you, and sorry we couldn't make it like the whole show.
It was both my computer deciding not to work, but also Google YouTube just stopped streaming. YouTube just stopped letting us stream. So that's fun. Yeah.
Sorry, guys.
Sorry, folks. Girls. But thank you for listening, folks. And thanks for trying.
So I was able to sit down with Daniel Roche, who is the vice president of Alexa, and he was on stage presenting and doing demos of the new Alexa Plus and how it integrates with third parties. You can listen to this interview now. It will tell you a lot more about all that third-party integration stuff we were describing. The presentation today, your part was specifically, it seemed, about how Alexa Plus would work with all these different third-party apps and integrations.
Right, yeah.
Especially given LLMs don't have, you know, natural, like, accessibility for APIs and stuff.
Not natively integrated, yeah.
Could you, just for our podcast audience and for myself as kind of a refresher, go over that really quickly again?
Yeah, so at a high level, there are three different ways that Alexa Plus integrates with other services, capabilities, devices out there. And by the way, at launch, it will be integrated with tens of thousands of different services, devices, and capabilities out there. The first way is through APIs. Mm-hmm. So APIs, you know, LLMs don't natively support APIs, calling APIs, filling out arguments the right way, choosing methods, etc. A big part of what we've done with Alexa Plus is basically building the nature of those integrations, and then building it at scale such that it can accommodate so many different types of integrations. You heard me talk about experts in our show today. Mm-hmm. So experts are the fundamental way that we accomplish that. So the information expert is really, really good at going out and taking advantage of, you know, partnerships that we have with information sources, for mm-hmm. example, right? Or you saw a scheduling and reservation expert today use OpenTable APIs to complete a reservation for a restaurant that's just a few blocks from here. And so APIs is the first way that I would say in terms of the three. The second way is, you know, partners don't necessarily show up and have all of these different APIs ready to go. But they might have a website that has all the capabilities they want to offer to customers. Thumbtack's a great example of that. They, you know, help you find service providers across a huge range of different kinds of services you need for your house. You need your gutters cleaned, you need a plumber, you need, I use the example of my oven is broken.
Right.
And in this case, Alexa Plus gathers some information from you. When do you need them? What kind of service do you need, et cetera? So in a voice interaction, you could say, hey, my oven's broken. I need someone as soon as possible. I've got some cooking to do. Alexa gives you a range of possible options. You can help pick. And then Alexa goes off on the internet and goes to a website like Thumbtacks and doesn't need APIs to go to the calendar components and book a time and to the selection components and find a service provider and to all the different experiences that you might navigate yourself on their website. Alexa Plus goes off and does all that, comes back and just tells you it's done. Period. Done. Mm-hmm. That's the second way. The third way is in an agent-to-agent way. So if there's another generative AI agent out there, and we could probably both name several, but the example I used today was Suno.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool entrepreneurs, by the way, and a very cool set of capabilities. And they're doing generative music. So you can just say what you want for a song. My example today was about a bodega cat. I just wanted to prove that you really can write any song you want. A country song.
In the countryside.
That's right. Yeah. Fewer bodegas out in the country, but you can definitely write a country music song about a bodega cat using Alexa Plus and the integration with another generative AI agent in Suno. You know, we do believe the world is going to be full of different generative AI agents that have different capabilities. Alexa can help orchestrate across that full range of space so that customers can take advantage of those super specialized experiences like Suno.
I have a few questions.
Yeah.
I'll start with, you know, a way to kind of make sense of what you're describing, which is to compare it to things that I already know are out there. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if you've heard of or observed Rabbit's R1 device. Mm-hmm. Rabbit, you know, teamed up with Teenage Engineering, made this wearable slash
I have seen it,
device. Yeah. And I think one of the biggest selling points for those of us in the industry was less the hardware and all of the fun stuff like the crank and more of the like promise of the large action model they brought up, which sounds a lot like what you're doing with Alexa and APIs, right? They're using, you know, machine learned chatbots or whatever their AI assistant is being called, and using that to kind of navigate third-party apps without any need for really deep integration. That's kind of how I'm sort of seeing a bit of a similarity. I'm also seeing a bit of similarity to Google's Duplex, which calls restaurants and makes reservations on your behalf. So when you're talking about the second way where the partners that don't have an API, Alexa can go navigate the website for you, it sounds somewhat structurally similar. Is that correct?
It might be from a technology perspective. I mean, I do think from a customer experience perspective, customers just want the thing done.
Yeah.
They don't have to be responsible or care about any of these things, right? They just want, I need a plumber or I want to book a table, et cetera. So we try to make sure that for consumers, for customers, they just see the same super easy to use experience, whether it's voice or a couple taps on the app, let's say on your phone, to kick off a task. But then, yes, I think you're right to say that there's this range of options happening in the background, whether it's API integration, agentic Alexa going off online and getting something done. Mm-hmm. I do think the scale of Alexa Plus is unique.
Yeah.
Coming out of the box with tens of thousands of different services and devices already integrated on day one for Alexa Plus, I think is unique.
By the integrated, do you mean that the third-party services had to do any work on the back end? Is it all the second approach, which is the website crawling, or is it like some of them had to tweak?
There's a range. There's a range. Gotcha. We have a lot of deeply integrated API partners.
Yeah.
You know, agents going off online is newer technology.
Yeah.
You know, agent to agent is really cutting edge. You know, agents interacting for a customer on their behalf. So I think on the time scale, that's how it looks.
I mean, I think there is like a lot of appeal to just talking to the one assistant in your life and having that assistant talk to all the other AI chatbots out there for you. Can I just ask, I want to be clear on this.
Yeah.
The Suno was one example, but can you say use Alexa to talk to Capital One's customer service chatbot to get a transaction, you know, refunded or something?
So nothing to share today about about any of the selection that's available over time. But I will tell you that the SDK is all about integrations like that, where you can use Alexa to make connection with for you on your behalf, other agents, and complete tasks. So that's the whole idea.
Right. That's what I was
You're
trying to get
at.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Because I didn't want to that was the first example I could think of.
Yeah.
United Airlines, for example, is another one.
I mean, we know, again, I think customers are going to benefit from tons of different generative AI experiences. And we strongly believe that they should work together so that they're not disconnected.
So the other thing you said is that these, what people want is like something that they can just talk to and have it done for them, right? But then the other thing that people want, in my opinion, that is lacking a lot of today is a solution they can trust to be accurate all the time. So how has Amazon worked around, or how does Amazon plan to work around this issue that, or this notion that Gen AI, as it stands, is still not 100% reliable and accurate and trustworthy, and that hallucinations can happen.
What is a, you know, these are non-deterministic models at the outset in generative AI, right? They produce excellent conversation. They produce, you know, multiplicity of different answers, even faced with the same question. But you can build systems around those models to ensure that they're deeply grounded in knowledge. You heard me talk about that today. That is grounding in our own knowledge graph from Amazon, you know, using reliable sources on the internet, using partnerships with authoritative sources. You know, we have hundreds of those already on day one so that we get answers right. Because customers want to be able to count on that experience. So I think, you know, what you have to do is use the right tool for the job.
Yeah.
LLMs are at the foundation of the architecture, but they're not the only thing answering the question. And I actually think in the industry, there's been a mistake of thinking a model is a product. So the reason you're asking the question is because other products will simply give you an answer out of the LLM.
Right.
If you're asking for an authoritative answer, that's not actually sometimes the way to get one. And I think that's what you're highlighting. So we have taken great care with Alexa Plus. Will it make mistakes? Every piece of software makes mistakes. But we're working hard to ground it in knowledge.
So to clarify that last point that you said, and to make sure I've got it right, you're saying that instead of just relying on the assistant to give the answer back, you might have the assistant say, according to such and such website that, you know, came up with my search on the internet, this is the most accurate sounding answer.
Yeah, or this authoritative source in my knowledge graph, right? I mean, you saw me ask about Alex Bregman, you know, some nerdy baseball stats today. And the fact is,
triggered a lot of fights in the Engadget team, but sure, let's go.
That's what that was all about.
I loved it.
That's what that was all about. But I do think, you know, you want those answers to be right. And that means you need an authoritative source that's going to tell me about how well Alex Bregman does at Fenway. I don't want that made up. I need to be prideful here in Manhattan asking those questions.
The other thing I wanted to ask, and it is a bit less big picture, Alexa Plus is coming out early access starting next month, and people who don't have Prime will probably need to pay $20 a month. For people who, I guess, have Prime, that update probably occurs automatically if you're already paying for Prime, right?
Like, what will the customer experience be like when I get Alexa Plus? It's included in your membership.
So let's say you have...
That's all.
So you have an Echo speaker at home that's tied to your Prime account, then it'll update on its own over the air.
What's going to happen is we're starting with our large screen devices.
Right.
So we'll be rolling out to customers in waves.
Gotcha.
It'll be starting in March, late March, most likely. 8-inch plus screens will be the first wave of customers that will get access. A customer does accept. We are changing the experience for them. We want to make sure customers know that. So you would see it either on a device like an Echo Show, or you'd see it in an email.
Right.
Simple press of the button. And then for Prime customers, the Alexa Plus experience is completely updated. For non-Prime customers, you can start in that situation paying $19.99 a month. There is an early access period to have in there, but that's the simple approach.
Gotcha. If you don't have a Prime membership, and you somehow have an Echo speaker that's not tied to it, would you still access the older version of Alexa on that?
The original version of Alexa continues to be available.
And how would they play with each other? Is there any sort of, you know, scenario where they would interact and one experience would be, you know, so different that it gets in the way of the other? You know what I mean?
Not that we've found.
Okay. So you've done testing around this.
We have done testing around it. I don't know that we've hit every possible imaginable case, but we believe that that'll work fine.
And then tell me a little bit about the setup process. I know you mentioned that there's like acknowledgement that some things are going to look different. You're upgrading to Alexa Plus, but do you have to like re-sign into some accounts? Do you have to like, you know, allow permissions again to different integrations, for example, or does it happen on a case by case basis when like, you know, they reach out?
Everything that you've done carries forward. So for example, let me just give you a hardcore example.
Yes.
Some people have spent years setting up their smart home. You know, I bought a plug from this provider, I bought a light from that provider, et cetera. And the reason that customers love Alexa is it takes away all the complexity. I don't need to remember who built what device. I talk to them all just the same, one consistent interface for everything. And we would never take that away. So that's the kind of thing where we want customers to continue to benefit from from everything that they've put together in their home, right? Mm-hmm. So the day one, they just advance to a new version of the way to interact with those things.
Gotcha.
They don't have to reset up anything.
And if you're adding a new service, for example, like you just signed up for, I don't know, Netflix for the first time or Uber.
Yeah, you would just do that in the ways that you do it today.
Gotcha.
It's a little bit easier, frankly, because Alexa can walk you through those setups in many more cases. So you don't have to dig around in the Alexa app. You can just say, Alexa, I want to set up a streaming account with Hulu or something. And In many cases, you get a QR code, and it's just one simple tap. So Alexa can walk you through a bunch of that herself. We like to say Alexa is an expert on herself.
Nice. Yeah. We're seeing this develop everywhere else in, you know, the consumer tech space, like with, you know, redesigned Siri, for example, mm-hmm. or like Gemini and all of that stuff. Where do you see Amazon's generative AI ambitions playing out outside of Alexa Plus?
Well, you heard Andy talk about how much is going on at the company.
Yeah.
So much, right? Unbelievable and highly differentiated cloud services, hardware underlying that. And then on top of that, you know, literally 1,000+ consumer applications of Gen AI, where Alexa is literally one of those. It's one. If you read the list, Alexa would say one. You know, Alexa Plus is one of them. So it's a huge amount of work that we're doing. I think our ambitions at Amazon are always just grounded in what we can do for customers, though. We've got consumer customers. We've got enterprise customers. We've got such a broad range of customer entertainment customers. So artists, authors, et cetera, you know the list because we think there's a lot we can do.
Yeah. What is your favorite thing that Alexa Plus can do?
I showed some of them, frankly. I mean, I think if you ask Mara or Panos the same question, I think one of the ways we divided up our work today was to just say, well, what do we love to do?
Yeah.
Like, what are the things that we actually do?
So Panos with the Ring camera thing, right?
Yeah, he loves that. And, you know, he loves seeing his kids. He loves his dogs.
And yours is ordering.
When we saw the driver yesterday, he was like, Daniel, come in here. You know, where do you see this? Because he'd been telling me about that driver. And he hadn't had a Ring footage, as far as I know.
Yeah.
Where we had seen that happen with Aries. But so you're seeing some of the best. I do a lot of information exploration with Alexa.
Okay.
I sit next to my teenage kids and do homework mm-hmm. with them. We do a lot of information exploration together just as we're doing schoolwork together. We do calculus together.
Mm-hmm.
I've asked about, you know, I had forgotten the fundamental theorem of calculus, like how you would say it. Alexa's got the fundamental theorem of calculus at your fingertips for you. So there's a lot of that in my house, for sure. We're getting excited for the baseball season coming. I mentioned, you know, like booking things and using some of these new integrations, Yelp and OpenTable and Uber and, you know, food and dinner time is tricky at my house. My kids row crew and they come home ravenous. So using Grubhub through Alexa with my Alexa app, and it's in the tray on the way home, is awesome. It's just super easy to just say what you want.
Yeah.
Last orders, it all comes up. So I think you saw a lot of my favorite things today.
Yeah, we saw a lot of things on stage today. It was really hard to kind of imagine in my real world and what my favorite would be. I know we're kind of close to time. I have so many like nitty gritty questions, things like, you know, they just flew out of my brain. You were talking, the Ring camera stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it seems, I know it works only with Ring cameras, that video search feature, but does it work with, like, I know it doesn't work with Blink cameras just yet, but.
Yeah, it's with Ring, the smart video search.
Yeah.
Because you're also seeing AI applied to the video sources, right?
Right.
Like, I think Alexa on stage might have even said, which we've heard once before, I think, say, I found with a husky.
It has
learned.
Right.
Through video analysis that Aries is a husky.
Right, yeah.
So it's often.
Could you ascribe a name to the husky?
I think you could. I think Panos could say, yep, that's Aries.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure. We'd have to go.
We're kind of early days. So, I mean, we're going to wait and see some more.
It's just the beginning. It's a lot, but it's just the beginning.
And we'll end on this. How long has it been until, like, today since working on NextGen Alexa?
I mean, it takes, to get to this point, you really need large language models to have reached the state of the art that they are at now.
Yeah.
And then you've got tens of thousands of services and devices and capabilities integrated, hundreds of experts in different areas, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a big lift, but, you know, a lot is dependent on where we are with the state of the art in LLMs. And I would say that we're there reasonably recently.
Yeah.